A lot of people will stay at a firm if they feel somebody cares about them and is investing in them. So I think teaching them and training them and giving them opportunities, helping them figure out what's going to be right for them, and having them understand that you don't expect them to suddenly bring in $100,000 in business by tomorrow morning. This is something that is a long-term investment.
More often than not, we will see that most businesses, that includes law firms overwhelmingly, never pass the threshold of $1 million in annual revenue. And the reason for that is it's started by specialists, it's managed by specialists. We're doing all of those things, like you said, including taking out trash. Maybe not taking out trash, but so many other things. That's not focused on business development.
You're listening to the Grow Law Firm podcast, where each guest shares actionable, practical ideas with you on how to get more clients, expand your reach, and grow your law firm's revenue and profit. Here's your host, Sasha Burson.
Hi there. I have a small but really meaningful favor to ask you. You know, I watch At The Stats on our YouTube channel and Spotify channel, wherever most people listen and watch our podcast. And I see that over 80% of everybody who listens to it regularly is not a subscriber. I'm asking you to subscribe to this channel. And the reason for that is my mission and the mission of my team is to help as many small law firm owners to learn how to transform their law firms into better businesses, and so they in turn enjoy better lives. When you hit subscribe button, you tell these platforms that this is content worth listening, worth viewing, and they in turn will show it to many other small law firm owners and hopefully help me fulfill our mission of helping them create a better business and enjoy better lives. So would you please do me this favor? It would mean the world to me, and hit the subscribe button. And my promise to you is that I will continue to work hard at creating good content with practical ideas that help you and your teams grow better law firms. Thank you. Welcome to another great episode of the Grow Law Firm podcast. I have an amazing guest with me here today, Elise Holtzman, a former practicing attorney turned coach and trainer and consultant for lawyers and law firm owners for what I believe now has been a 16-year career, right?
Just about.
Amazing. So you're the founder and CEO of The Legal Edge, where you have been doing exactly that, training law firm owners and lawyers to do a few things. Number one, which I really like, and this is where I really want to spend a bulk of our time together, is how to develop a book of business. It's interesting, like lawyers are not trained how to do that in law schools. And usually they get out and they realize, usually somewhat quickly, is that you kind of sort of, depending on the size of the law firm, you kind of eat what you kill. Or it really helps to bring in new business because then the size of your paycheck really goes up. But whereas there have been some books written on the subject, I find that most lawyers are poorly equipped to do exactly that.
Yeah, you're so right, Sasha. They don't teach us that stuff in law school. They don't even mention it, right? So I always say that they gave us two things in law school. We got a foundation in the law. So we learned constitutional law, torts, contracts, all of those things. And then they taught us how to think like a lawyer. So you can never think like a normal person again, which is also true. And then they say, congratulations, you're a lawyer. Go have a great career. You then wind up with a law firm and come to find out that there are all of these skills and mindsets and behaviors and habits that you don't know anything about that are essential to being successful as a lawyer in private practice. And so that's one of the things that I love to do, is to help lawyers recognize that they have the ability to develop a book of business. And then, you know, talk to them, of course, about their motivations. Why does it make sense for them to want to do that? And it's going to be different things for different people. But for the most part, I think that it's very important, because ultimately what it allows you to do is to call the shots in your own career. Of course, you can earn higher compensation depending on how your law firm functions. In most law firms, if you're bringing in more business than the person next to you, you're going to earn more compensation than the person next to you. It's also often how we choose our law firm leaders, whether we should or not. We say, wow, Sasha, you're a great lawyer. You have a great book of business. People really like you. They respect you. We'd like you to become managing partner of the firm, or we'd like you to become managing partner of this practice group. Now, what business development has to do with being a leader of a practice group is anyone's guess. But these are the kinds of situations where doors become open to you. You can also often choose the kinds of clients you want to work with. Maybe you get to work on the matters that are most interesting to you and delegate the matters to someone else that perhaps don't get you as excited. So there are lots of different reasons for somebody to want to develop a book of business. It just becomes a challenge for a whole host of reasons.
It makes sense. You know, I've been following you for a couple of years, and I remember, I think around 2022, you were on a podcast and you talked about the fact that many lawyers experience anxiety. I know that when it comes to putting yourself out there and trying to develop a book of business causes a lot of anxiety in so many people, myself included, and so many other people who I know. They would be like, hey, you're anxious. This is not a natural skill set to go out there and build relationships. So how do you overcome that?
I think the first thing to do is to recognize where the anxiety is coming from. And I think it's coming from, certainly not everybody has it, but a lot of people do, right? At varying levels. So for some people, it's about feeling like I don't want to be salesy, right? That feels unseemly. It feels classless. I wasn't raised to be a salesperson. I wasn't raised to beat my chest and tell everybody how great I am. And it's inappropriate and I don't want to do that. And that's what sales is about. So I can't be a salesperson. Because let's face it, business development is marketing and sales. We don't necessarily like to call it that. As lawyers, we like to call it business development because the sales word is kind of a dirty word. But part of it does come from this idea that the legal profession is this kind of, it's very professional and it's very genteel. And it's sort of like this country club profession where intelligent people sit around talking about lofty subjects. When in fact, we know it's a business. And so if you were raised to believe, whether you were raised by your family to believe this, or whether you were raised by the legal profession to believe this, that selling legal services is low class and unseemly, of course, you're going to have anxiety about it. Another thing is that research demonstrates that most lawyers are actually introverts. And that doesn't mean shy or that you don't have social skills, but what it means is that you are not necessarily into, you know, being the bright, shiny object, sharing every detail of information about yourself, being the glad-handing person, you know, at a cocktail party. You're more potentially reserved. Sometimes, you know, networking with a bunch of people or having conversations with a whole bunch of people at once can feel very draining. And so you prefer to be one-on-one with people. And so there's also this idea that I think is not necessarily true, or not, I know it's not true, that in order to be a business developer, you have to be this very gregarious, loud, you know, backslapping kind of a person and be able to have the gift of gab and talk to anybody at a huge networking event, when that's not in fact the case at all. So I think that for some people, they say, well, you don't understand, Elise, I'm an introvert, and so I can't do this. Again, nothing could be further from the truth. It's about finding a way to do it that aligns with who you are as a person so that you can develop those relationships that are going to lead to business. So, you know, understandably, a lot of anxiety. On top of that, we are driven by the billable hour. And I know that if I bill an hour, I've got about an hour billed. I have now delivered value to my firm by charging $400 an hour, $1,200 an hour, whatever it may be in your particular practice. If, however, you're asking me to do something speculative over here and quote unquote waste time talking to someone or writing an article or speaking on a panel, I can't show my firm that I've worked hard for that hour. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to revert to the billable hours on my desk because I know that I'm going to be rewarded for that. So there's always that anxiety of have I built enough? Have I built enough? Have I built enough? And how dare I turn my attention to something else that is not designed to put a billable hour, you know, on the chart immediately. So it's understanding that it's an investment of time and energy that is going to pay off in the long term, but is not necessarily going to pay off this minute or this week or this month. And that's an understandable source of anxiety. So in terms of, you know, so those are just some of the things that come to mind for any individual person. There might be other things that are getting in their way. You know, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I didn't grow up in a connected family. I don't know anybody fancy. You know, there are lots of different reasons and objections that lawyers will raise when it comes to the idea of being able to develop business. So as I say, I think the first step is recognizing this stuff and also recognizing that you're not the only one, right? These are very, very common objections and sources of anxiety that I hear all the time. And so I do think it's about learning what business development is and what it isn't. It's not about pushy sales. It's not about trying to sell something to somebody that they don't want. It's not about getting out there and beating your chest and telling everybody how great you are. In fact, it's quite the opposite. It's really about developing relationships and delivering value, maybe in the form of thought leadership or just being helpful to somebody else. Things that you're already doing in your personal life and your professional life, you might not consider them to be business development, but they are. And so I think that getting past that ick factor, that this is like some icky thing, is something that is a good place to start. And then also recognizing that whoever you are, whatever your personality is, whether you're an off the charts extrovert or an off the charts introvert, you have the ability to develop relationships with people and share your expertise and deliver that value without making yourself uncomfortable, right? If you're somebody who loves the big networking receptions, go and do that and then follow up with people afterwards. If you don't love the big networking receptions, maybe find other ways to meet people, you know, have one-on-one conversations with people, join a small group and get to know three or four people at the same time. But you don't have to do it the way somebody else does it. You can do it in a way that fits you.
Mm. I found so many interesting things said. The one thing that strikes me is that people are uncomfortable and thus they do not want to do the uncomfortable things. I grew up in the Union. I lived in Soviet Union until my like mid-teen years before I immigrated to the United States. My mom was a really solid person, and she grew up in fairly tough conditions. And her approach to things is like, tough? Good. Keep going. Oh, you're uncomfortable. Amazing. Keep going. So I find that business development, marketing and sales, as the rest of the world refers to it, is it has a multiplier effect. When we look at the median income for an attorney, it's, let's say in 2023, it was somewhere between like $150,000 and $200,000 a year. When you talk to rainmakers, people who, most of them, when you interview them, like if they've been rainmaker for a decade plus successfully, they'd be like, I was very uncomfortable starting out, but my income is 800,000, 1 million, 1.2 million, 1.4 million, 1.6 million. The highest I've heard was like 1.6 million. I should talk to someone. He's like, yeah, I'm a rainmaker. You know, that's all I do. I don't work cases. I bring them in. So, all right, how about this? Like when you go to the gym, lifting weights is uncomfortable. Doing hot yoga is uncomfortable. Taking an ice bath is uncomfortable. What if you can break through the, I'm uncomfortable, screw this. The effect multiplier can be 10x. I can make the same in 1 year. Or somebody else who was uncomfortable makes 10 times more than I do. Meaning it will take me 10 years to make the same amount of money as this guy who is no smarter than I am, no more experienced than I am, no better lawyer than I am, but makes 10 times more because guess what? Got over the uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a really important point. So first of all, you know, people say all the time, I love hearing about your mom. People say all the time that being uncomfortable is where the growth is, right? Huh? So when we're comfortable, we're not growing. We're just existing. We're kind of coasting. And so nobody wakes up in the morning, or most people don't wake up in the morning and say, wow, I'd really like to be uncomfortable today. So that's going to set some people apart. If you're willing to be a little bit uncomfortable and then try the next thing that's a little bit uncomfortable, you're going to grow where somebody else isn't going to grow. Also, you talk about this idea of rainmakers doing nothing but rainmaking. Some of them are not. I mean, I know a big rainmaker at a major New York City law firm, and maybe he bills 400 hours a year. He shouldn't even be billing 400 hours a year, right? Because what he's doing is he's taking care of certain clients that only want him, and he feels, you know, it makes sense for them only to have him. But his highest and best use of his time is to be out there developing business to bring in for everybody else to be doing. And so over time, you do see that people who are able to bring in a lot of business, that's what they're good at. And if their firms are smart, they say, don't worry about the billable hours. You keep doing what you're doing. But yes, they're able to grow their compensation dramatically because they're not just coasting. They're growing and they're delivering tremendous value. Now, can most lawyers have a nice career and make a, you know, make a nice living? Sure. If you're somebody who wants more, if you want to feel that you have more control over your career, that you're able to grow something that you can look back and say, wow, that was not easy, but I made it happen, right? If you want to help grow your firm, if you want to just feel that you've reached your full potential, I think that rainmaking and business development as a private practice lawyer is a great way to do that. There are other things you can do. You can help lead your firm. You can help come up with a new model for your firm, right? Maybe you bring in a different way of doing things and you help lead the firm into the future. But most of the people who do that are people that at least have some rainmaking ability and other people in the firm are willing to listen to them. Because what often happens is people say, well, you know, they don't, I'm not going to listen to them because they don't have as much skin in the game in this firm. So why would I listen to their opinion? And so again, it gives you so many opportunities, you know, everything from the compensation to simply looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, you know what, I am achieving my full potential. I'm really doing what I'm meant to be doing. And I can be proud of the work that I'm doing and proud of what I've created.
There's another side to it, I believe. And that is when you're grinding, when you're doing the busy work, and this, regardless of what business you're in, as long as you're providing the service, your mind is occupied with providing the service. As long as you're doing billable hours, regardless of what work you're in, your focus is on the billable hours. Thus, you almost develop tunnel vision on work, 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 work. When you do business development, when you get that effect multiplier, you will actually work fewer hours and thus be able to spot a lot more opportunities. My goal for every year in my company is to fire myself from at least one major responsibility because that gives me more time. And that time allows me, I work less. Every year I work a little bit less, actually quite a lot less, right? But the effect that I have on my business grows with every passing year for that very reason. I have the time to think, not just do.
Because you know, and what many lawyers forget, especially in small to mid-sized firms, is that the way lawyers make money is through leverage. When we're trading time for dollars, there are only so many hours in a day. And so you need that leverage. You need to be bringing in enough business for somebody else and several somebody else's to be doing the work that you bring in order to grow, right? You get maxed out as an individual human being. And that's why we band together in law firms. But many law firms are run like a bunch of solos operating in, under the same, yeah. Right, under the same name. And so I think that's part of it. So recognizing that we can't create more time. Each one of us has the same 24/7 that everybody else has, but you recognize that your highest and best use to your organization is not just the doing, and, you know, the dotting the I's and crossing the T's. And when you take yourself out of that and allow somebody else who has tremendous skill to do those things, you are opening up yourself up to more possibility. So in terms of obstacles, one of the biggest, and we've touched on it, but one of the biggest obstacles for most lawyers is the time, because they always say, oh, you don't understand, Elise, I'm so busy. I do understand, right? Lawyers are busy. Let's be fair. Most lawyers are working very hard. They're working long hours. Are you working on the right things? Are you working on the things that are going to move your business forward? Are you working on the business or in the business? And it's a cliche, but most lawyers are working in the business. They're not working on the business. They're working in the business delivering the legal services, and they're exceptional at it, but they're not working on the business and growing the business and streamlining processes and making the business more productive and more profitable.
Yeah, I always think about a business structure, whether you have a relatively small law firm, mid-size or large law firm, you have specialists or lawyers who do law. You have managers who manage various departments. And if you think about it as like a military structure, which our army, our military branches have figured out to the T, every commander has six direct reports. If you have more than six direct reports, communications get jumbled up. You do not become an effective team, or nor are you a good, effective team leader. So you have specialists, managers, and then you have executives. So what I find is that in most small law firms, law firm owners are the specialists, the managers, and the executives. 80% plus of the time is being spent on being specialist, 15 to 18% of time is being spent on being manager, and maybe 2% of time is being spent on being an executive. Thus, most law firms, as any other professional service organizations, grow at a rate of 4.3% per year, which is like during normal times where inflation is the target rate of 2.5-3%, you're barely treading water. That 1% growth year over year is nothing. You may make yourself look good, feel good that you grew 4%, but the reality is once you factor in normal inflation, it's you're standing still.
Yeah, you're barely treading water. And so, you know, to your point, I mean, if you look at large law firms, and I'm not saying large law firms are so perfect, right? I work with a range of law firm sizes, and they've all got their opportunities, and they've all got things that are doing great, and they've also got their challenges. But if you look at the law firms of today, the large modern law firms of today, they are recognizing more and more that they need to bring in people who do a specific job so they can, everybody is kind of operating in their core genius. They're operating in the lane that makes sense for them. If you look at a company, let's say ABC Company manufactures widgets, you've got somebody who is manufacturing the widgets, someone who's designed the widgets, somebody who markets the widgets, somebody else who sells the widgets, somebody else who does customer service, and you know, somebody who repairs the widgets or whatever. You don't have one person doing all of those jobs. If you saw that in a corporation, you would say, that's ridiculous. Who on earth would take on all of those different jobs? Have one person do this and they're an expert in that, and then have the marketing expert do the marketing thing and the sales expert do the sale. And of course, they're going to work together and figure out what you know, combination and collaboration makes sense, but you don't expect them to all do the same thing. And you know, the marketing guy is the guy taking the trash out every night, right? That's not what we expect from companies. And yet in law firms, everybody's doing everything. The mm-hmm. owner of the, for the smaller law firms, the mid-sized law firms, the owners have a very hard time getting away from the notion that they can do everything themselves. And I think part of that is fear. And again, understandable fear. I'm not saying that there are not things to be nervous about, right? But, oh, how can we afford to pay somebody else? One question to ask yourself is how can you afford not to pay somebody else, right? Because you're not growing. So there are investments that can be made. And when you invest in the right people in the right seats, and I sound like Gina Wickman from EOS, but talk about putting the right people in the right seats is very important. And so that's why more and more law firms are understanding that they need to hire people like a COO, a CFO, a CMO for marketing, right? There are different people that, and the managing partners do certain things, but most managing partners are still being expected to practice law. Not all of them. Some of them are professional managing partners for a number of years, but they're still being expected to practice law. So every hour that they're practicing law, they're not leading the firm into the future.
Yeah. I think that also stems from the fact that lawyers start out their careers as specialists at law. And most law firm owners never really get trained up to be executives. In fact, they never get trained up to be managers. Never. It just kind of naturally happens because a guy or gal who's been a good specialist decides to, well, I'll start my own law firm. The barrier to entry is very low. As long as you're a licensed attorney, you just go for it. Right here, you have your professional corporation and you went for it. And now you're a law firm owner, but now you just took on a lot more responsibility, and at some point you become so successful and you start bringing in people, but you're still that specialist. And now you become manager for those people. And when, if you have time, you become an executive. But more often than not, we will see that most businesses, that includes law firms, overwhelmingly never pass the threshold of $1 million in annual revenue. And the reason for that is it's started by specialists, it's managed by specialists, and the executives were doing all of those things, like you said, including taking out trash. Maybe not taking out trash, but so many other things. That's not focused on business development, for example. And I want to circle back to the subject of business development. So a typical small law firm has few attorneys. And I think for executives that are actually focused on growing those businesses, the owners, they have, and I've had numerous conversations about this, they have the hardest time convincing their lawyers to do business development. Like if their lives depended on it, they still couldn't convince them. Or if they could convince them, it's like, I'm going to do this, this once, and then I'm going to do it sometime again, someday, sometime in the future when I got time. Meanwhile, if you look at data, I had a great executive on this podcast from Clio, and Joshua Lennon. He said that when they set up Clio fully integrated, they see that on average, a lawyer at a small law firm bills 1.5 hours per day.
I saw that research from Clio. It was shocking, absolutely shocking at the time.
So a lot of busy work. So let's imagine that you and I own a law firm and we have four attorneys in the law firm. They all do okay. They all would rather not do business development. How do we sell them on the fact that they actually need to do business development for our law firm's sake and for their own sake and for the sake of their families?
Okay, so you just got me on my soapbox. So this is one of my favorite topics. I think that, first of all, let's go back to before we even hired these people. In a perfect world, we would be hiring not just because they're good lawyers and they're good at what they do, right? Not just because they graduated from X and such law school and they had these grades or whatever it is, but we're hiring for, and look, a lot of law firms do this where they're hiring for pedigree. You know, we want the top person from our state's law school, or we want the, you know, somebody from this fancy law school or whatever it may be. But I think that from the beginning of time, if you're looking to grow a business development culture at your firm, an entrepreneurial growth oriented culture at your firm, it's very important to be hiring for business development desire, at least, even if not skills, right? And so that's I think the ideal. Once you have people in the firm, though, and they're good lawyers, but they're not necessarily feeling it, you know, they're not interested in developing business, to your point, we've got to show them why this could be great for them and why this could be great for the firm. And part of that is really having an understanding of what it is that your people want, right? Why are they there? There may be some people who just want to do good work and go home every day. They don't have particular goals. That person, you know, for growth, that person may or may not be a good fit for your firm. Maybe they're a good fit because they do a particular kind of work. But I think for a lot of people these days, it's about helping them figure out what do you want to achieve and then letting them see how engaging in business development activities consistently over time can help them grow their business and in turn help them reach the goals that they have set for themselves. I also think that if people want to stay at a firm long term, if they feel that this is a good culture for them, a good fit for them, having them understand that this is part of what goes on here, right? Because we are growing this business, we're growing this firm. So as you point out, there are two levels of benefit. There's the benefit to the firm, and then there's the benefit to the individual person. And we can't paint with a broad brush and assume that everybody wants the same thing. So I think having a better sense of what it is that your people want, understanding that it may not be the right fit for everybody, but helping them understand how the two things align is going to get them to be more motivated. Also understanding from a personality perspective. So I work with a set of personality tools that, you know, I was very skeptical about personality tools when I first started hearing about using them in a coaching and training practice. But I think that understanding what people's core motivators are is very important for them and very important for you so that you're working most effectively with the people you know, in your practice group, in your firm, on your team. I then think the one thing that's really, really important, and we talked about this in the beginning, is one of the reasons they don't want to do it is because they don't know how, right? Business development can feel like this, oh, this big cloud, business development, just get out there and do it. What does that even mean? I don't know what get out there and do it means. So if I'm sitting in my office and I know how to do the work on my desk, I'm going to do that way before I'm going to go do something where I have absolutely no idea how to even get started. So I think that training people in business development, having them see what works and what doesn't work, and then having them understand that they can take the principles of business development and customize them for themselves is very, very important. So as I was saying before, you have somebody who's the life of the party versus somebody who's more of a shy, you know, bookwormy type. Who's more, you know, more intellectual or studious or whatever. Both of those people can develop business, but you've got to work with them to let them understand how to do it. I think nothing is more soul-sucking to people when it comes to business development when the firm says, we expect you to develop a book of business, now get out there and do it. Okay, where do I even start, right? I don't know anybody. I don't know how to do this. I don't even know what it means. So I think the training is important. I think coaching them through it is important, walking the walk with them. So it's a good place to start. When you say to people, and especially the younger generation, they want to be invested in. They've been invested in, you know, people have lots of complaints about all the different generations, and we all know what they are. But this younger generation is used to being invested in, right? They had every, you know, baseball camp and soccer camp and you know, people trained them and taught them and showed them what was possible for themselves. And they resonate with that. A lot of people will stay at a firm if they feel somebody cares about them and is investing in them. So I think teaching them and training them and giving them opportunities, you know, bring them with you on a client pitch. Invite them to be on a panel with you. Have somebody co-write an article with you and let them see their name on the byline. Show them how it can be done, but don't expect them to do it just your way, right? Because again, your way might not be the best way for them. So I do think that helping them figure out what's going to be right for them and then training them and then having them understand that you don't expect them to suddenly bring in $100,000 in business by tomorrow morning. This is something that is a long-term investment. If you're expecting instantaneous results from your people, they're going to quit before they even get started, because that's not typically how business development works, right? You can get a lot of traction. And also, the more sophisticated your clients, the more zeros at the end of a deal or a case, the longer it typically takes, right? The runway is longer because there are more levels of decision-making, et cetera. So if you're a Main Street lawyer with trust and estates clients or, you know, house closings or whatever, you may see a return on your investment more quickly than if you're, you know, representing hedge funds. And you've got to develop relationships over time and make it clear to them that you actually know what you're talking about, because they're going to switch from one big law firm to another. But I think that all of this is important, because the mindset is critical. If your mindset as a law firm leader is, you better do this and you better figure it out, and if, you know, the cream rises to the top and I don't see any fire in the belly, they're never going to do it. But if you can do it more as, listen, this is what our culture is about. We believe in you and think you can do this. We're going to give you the tools, including, you know, training and maybe some coaching and a budget, and, you know, try to get you opportunities to speak and write and sign you up for, you know, you can sign up for certain associations and all of that sort of thing. And we're going to help you along the way. That's a very different approach. And so you may get people, I've had people say to me, you know, law firms have brought me in to do business development coaching for a number of people. And I'll never forget, I had a guy say to me, listen, I'm sorry you're even wasting your time talking to me, because I'm not doing this. This is just not my thing. I'm never going to do it. I don't care what the firm says. And guess what? You know, when I didn't say to him, well, how dare you? And I can't believe you're saying that. But we sort of talked it through and figured out what the challenges were and what the opportunities were. He actually turned into a pretty consistent business developer.
Really, really interesting. So there are a few things that I want to highlight from what you just said. So number one, and I'm a firm believer of this, and this is how we actually hire at our company, you hire motivated people. And you want to know what their motivation is. We have certain practices and certain questions that we ask in our hiring process to make sure that the person has a big why they want to have this job and why they want to accomplish a certain financial success within the job, although the job title may not be naturally lending towards some sort of incentive pay. We build incentive pay in nearly every position here. We want to make sure that people are striving towards something. We want to know what that why is. Some people straight up tell us that I really like really nice lifestyle. I have an expensive car, an expensive house, and I like to go on expensive vacations. So I want to make X. And I'm like, I love you. As long as you have other criteria that matches what we need, you're hired. Why? Your drive is strong enough. I know that you're going to work your tail off to hit those objectives. By the way, when they say work your tail off, it doesn't mean that you have to work 60, 80 hours a week. Find a smart way. I'll show you a smart way to do this in 40 hours, sometimes 35 hours, sometimes 30 hours. Doesn't matter. It's not about the hours. It's about getting the job done and being motivated. And this goes for the sales team, and it goes for the production team. It goes for just everyone. So starting with motivated people, really important. Second factor that's really important, no matter how motivated they are, if you don't coach them, that motivation goes out the window. And coaching, and I am a firm believer in this, and a law firm owner, a leader may think that I'm insane when I say this, but everyone who is my direct report gets coached by me every day. I give them at least 15 minutes per day. It's the same as it would be if I was coaching a football team. I wouldn't just meet them on Sunday on the field. It makes no freaking sense to meet them on Sunday on the field and coach them from the sidelines then. You have to be there Monday through Friday and now watch them play what you taught them to do on Sundays. So coaching is really important, giving them enough time to develop the skill set. And again, it requires ongoing coaching. I frankly, and this may go against some of the conventional wisdom, I don't think that the coaching event once a year or once in a lifetime really does anything. That's not how you develop skills.
It doesn't do anything. It doesn't. So, and also trainings. I'll just interrupt for one quick second. Even trainings. And listen, I do trainings. That's one of the primary things that we do at the Lawyer's Edge is trainings inside of law firms. But what I always say to the law firm leaders with whom I'm working is that, listen, training is great. But we know from research that most people will go back to their desks and do what they've always done. Even if you're seeing, you know, people nodding along and they're enthusiastic, they're so excited in the room, we're having a great conversation. Yep. But people are people. They're human beings. They're subject to habit. Habits are hard to form. Habits are hard to break. And so they'll go back to their desks, especially because of the almighty billable hour. They'll go back to their desks and keep doing what they're doing. So you have to hit them in lots of different ways, right? You could have a meeting once a month to talk about business development topics. You could have them have individual coaches, have them have group coaches, have someone internally coach them, right? You don't have to spend additional money. There are lots of different things you can do, but to view it as a once in a lifetime thing. I once had a law firm say to me, well, yeah, we brought someone in to do a business development training 8 years ago. And, you know, and they were like sort of annoyed that nothing, right, it didn't work. And so I think, you know, to your point, doing it on a daily basis, doing it on a weekly basis, on a consistent basis, whatever that looks like for you is critical.
Yeah. And here's the thing. So we talk about all the right things, but one of the things that they do know is that if you do not budget for it, and the way that you budget for it is on your calendar, it's on the calendar, if you do not neglect, like you cannot neglect it. It's very easy to neglect what's on the calendar as long as it's like not something that you want to do. You don't neglect. And the way that you don't neglect it is if you have someone in the leadership role, someone that you directly report to, who actually coaches you on a daily basis and asks you, what got done yesterday? What will get done today? And usually you want to do that coaching before 11 o'clock in the morning. So there is enough time to get that done today, whatever it is that needs to be done. And I think that for a lot of business development, for regular activities, that you could budget 15, 20 minutes per day.
Yeah. So I'm smiling when you're talking about this, because this is something that I talk to my clients about all the time and I'm very passionate about. And it's that a couple things. First of all, if we don't put the time in the calendar, it's not going to happen.
Right.
Because there are so many other things going on. The partner wants you, the client needs you, a kid needs you, your assistant needs you, somebody always needs you. So there's a difference between urgency and importance. So the urgency is the ringing, pinging, and dinging, right? The email's ringing, the phone's ringing, the email's pinging, someone's standing in your doorway, they need something from you. And it could be really urgent for them. And so it feels really urgent for you, so you deal with it right away. Sometimes it's important to you. Often it's important to the client or important to somebody else. The challenge is that business development and growth of any kind falls into the category of super important to you, but not urgent.
Right.
So if I don't develop business today, I'm not going to get fired tomorrow. If I don't develop business today, my firm isn't going to fall apart tomorrow. The challenge is that I can say that every single day for the rest of my life and actually never take any action in the direction of this thing that's super important to me, my future, the future of the firm, but is not urgent in any given moment. And so to your point, making sure that you make business development part of your job description and put it on your calendar is critical. I often like to say, change your job description. So Sasha, it's like, you know, you're a lawyer, what do you do? And you say to yourself, I am a lawyer and I serve my clients, and I'm also in the business of marketing my legal services. These are two things that are part of my job description. It's not just the one lawyer thing where I do the lawyering work for my clients, and this business development is a nice to have in my spare time from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. on August 16th, where everything calmed down for 5 minutes. Right? But it's an everyday part of my job description. Lawyers are typically very reliable, responsible people. When they make something part of their job description and they say they're going to do it, they will typically do whatever it takes to do it. You mentioned this idea of putting it on your calendar and doing it on a daily basis or at a minimum a weekly basis. And you also mentioned the idea of respecting your own calendar. Because to your point, what happens is people go, oh, there's an appointment in the calendar, but it's just with me. I can just let that go. No, you've got to treat that appointment as just as important, if not more important, than the other appointments that are in your calendar. And so I always say, don't roll over and play dead. So let's say I have a business development appointment in my calendar, Sasha. I'm a junior partner, you're the senior partner, and my business development appointment with myself is at 2 p.m. for a half hour. And you say, you call me up and you say, hey, can you meet at 2 o'clock? Well, you're senior to me. I look at my calendar. It's just an appointment with myself. So I say, sure, Sasha, I'll meet you at 2 o'clock. There's no harm in saying, Sasha, you know what? I have an appointment at 2 o'clock. Would 2:30 work for you? Or would any time later today work for you, but I have an appointment in my calendar? Sasha doesn't know what the appointment is, right? It could be a client appointment. It could be an appointment to talk to the judge on a conference. And so the thing is, don't roll over and play dead and give up that important time to people just because they ask.
Do people still actually do that? Do people call each other up and be like, hey, can we talk at 2 o'clock?
Yeah. Or they send an email. They might not call, but they'll send an email or a text.
Our corporate culture for years has been everyone's calendar is accessible. You find a time that works for you and you request a meeting at the time that works for the other person. You don't call anybody. You don't Slack anybody and be like, hey.
And a lot of firms are there. You know, a lot of people, a lot of law firms, they can see each other's calendars and they do know what's appropriate. And so again, if you are doing that, which is great, but you don't put that time in your calendar as an appointment, nobody knows that that time is taken up. And so I think that, you know, it does require some discipline and it does, but what it ultimately becomes is habit formation. And, you know, if you're somebody who, you know, if you're somebody who exercises regularly, for example, it's not always easy, but you do it because you've made a decision that that's a priority for you and you're going to do it come hell or high water. And I think the same goes for business development. You can't only try to do business development in the spaces when you're not busy. Because it is one of these long-term rinse and repeat sorts of things that has to happen consistently. And so I think that giving yourself the gift of that time, even if it's an extra half hour twice a week or something like that, is absolutely critical for you to develop the habits that are going to result in business. And then I want to say one last thing about you talked about how do we motivate people. I think that part of it is financial. Right? What are people going to get as lawyers if they are spending time, or I like to say investing time, in business development activities? Again, if I bill an hour, I know what I'm getting for it. At the end of the year, you're going to say, oh, you know, at least billed whatever, 1600, 1800 hours. What am I going to get if I'm doing non-billable work? When people don't see, for some people, they'll be motivated internally because they know that they're building something. For other people, especially if they have small kids or they have somebody they're taking care of or there are things that they want to do, they're going to say, well, I could go home and spend time with my kids instead of spending an hour at a cocktail party with somebody. What am I getting out of that? So I think that having them understand from a financial perspective, if there's going to be upside for them and what that's going to look like, being transparent with them. And then also, if that's something you're going to take into consideration on a yearly basis when it comes to opportunities for them, you know, additional compensation, leadership opportunities, partnership, equity partnership, whatever that's going to look like, they will be much more likely to take on these additional tasks when they know what the rewards are going to be, even if they're not financial rewards.
But they will be financial rewards at some point in the future, yes. For sure. Elise, I've never done this on the podcast or otherwise, but I want to share my screen and show folks actually how my calendar is structured so that I'm not just talking, but this is how every week looks. Everything that's black are meetings, executive meetings that happened to take place 5 days a week with different direct reports.
Mm.
Like this, 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 this. These four meetings are executive meetings. These are executive meetings. I also happen to lead the sales team. So everything that's in yellow is the sales team. I also happen to perform some marketing functions. So everything that's in purple are my marketing functions. And everything that's in red, those are my personal things. So like tonight I'm going to training. And on Thursday I'm going to train. And on Sunday I'm going to train. So everything that needs to get done, it gets committed to the calendar. So I don't skip on it. This is like really, really important for me. And otherwise things are not going to happen. So whenever I need to get something done, it gets budgeted for on the calendar. Otherwise, I know it will be sitting on my desk, on a post-it note, somewhere on a piece of paper forever.
I learned this. So I love that you're showing all of us your calendar. It's really interesting to see how much time you're investing in your people, as you mentioned, right? Not just expecting them to run off and do everything themselves and talk to them every 6 months or once a year. You're talking to them every single day.
5 days a week.
I learned this concept of putting things in the calendar from one of my own coaches years ago, where we were talking about me doing something. And I mean, I have a list like this. I'm one of these list driven people. And she said, well, when are you going to do that? And I said, I don't know, but it's on my list. And she said, I mean, and she, you know, we became friends. And so we would joke with each other and be sort of obnoxious to each other. But she was like, dummy, you know, what does that do for you? It's on a list. It's sitting on your desk. You could have that list for the next 6 weeks or 6 months and have nothing happen. And so those really critically important things need to move from your to-do list onto your calendar. And I also think that's reduced tremendous anxiety. Because when I think, oh my God, I have all of these things to do, how am I going to get them done? I can say, oh, no worries. It's blocked out from 2 to 4 on my calendar on Thursday. I know I'm getting to it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of value there.
That time spot on your calendar because it's blocked out.
Right, exactly.
That's definitely one of the points. All right, so to sum this up again, hire motivated people. Make sure that you give them regular coaching. Leadership must have the right mindset, which is focused on actually growing the business, right? If you're not focused on growing the business, you don't need to hire motivated people. Then you can hire them for pedigree, which I obviously am not a leader of a law firm, but I don't know what pedigree has to do with building a successful business. Maybe it does because maybe some clients still care about that pedigree.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a little bit there. There's a law firm I know that hired entirely for pedigree. I mean, they had, when these guys started the firm in the 80s, they were big law refugees, as I like to call them. And they started this law firm in the 80s, and they were really good at making the phone ring. They got all excited. They started hiring people from the fanciest law schools. And these are exceptional human beings, exceptional lawyers. So they do very high level legal work. Over time, as the next generation started to come into the law firm to start running things, they looked around and they said, my God, we have like one or two people developing business here. The older people are slowing down and retiring. And we hired for pedigree, not for business development acumen or you know, motivations. And so it's taken them years to get the right people in the right places. Some of them got motivated and got good at it. Many of them did not because it was old habits and they didn't really want to do it. But being aware of that, right? Pedigree can sometimes be important. And listen, I mean, I went to a great law school with a fancy name and all of that. And it did some good things for me over the years. But when you know, people from every law school can grind out exceptional legal work. It doesn't have to be that you have those names for your lawyers. But you remember that you're building a business, right? It's not just a place where people grind out legal work. So
Great point. How can people connect with you to learn more about what you do and how you can benefit their law firm and help them grow?
Yeah, thanks so much for asking. So my business is called The Lawyer's Edge. And so people can find us at thelawyersedge.com. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. My name is Elise Holtzman, and so you'll find me there. And, you know, I'll just do a shout out. You know, some of our business development programs are things that we do every day. And then we've also got one specifically for women partners at law firms who, you know, want to grow a business. So if that's something that's of interest to you or somebody at your firm, I'd love to talk to you about that as well.
Love it. Elise, you're a wonderful resource. It was great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Sasha. I really had fun today. I love talking about this stuff. So thanks for giving me the platform to do that.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Grow Law Firm podcast. If you liked the ideas shared in this episode, help a fellow lawyer out by sharing a link to the episode. This episode is powered by the team of experts in client attraction, growlawfirm.com. Do you want a complimentary growth plan for your law firm? Request it at growlawfirm.com/blueprint.